As I recall, last time we played to this wonderful group of music lovers, I tested you out with some of the profound words of one of our favourite conductors, Ulrich von Berstenbeet, who's retired now, but he's currently the principal of the Royal College of Conducting. He's written this learned volume on how to conduct. Of course, not only symphonic repertoire, but also the huge subject of opera crops up in his book. So I thought I'd share with you the chapter on opera. Now, I think the most important aspect of this is one's ability to project and to use one's imagination. Oh, I've got a couple of props here which might help. Helping the job of spending one's disbelief. You know, you have to imagine you're in an opera house now. Right. Now, we've got various characters. Now, we can't play all the characters in the opera, obviously. Unfortunately, translated from the Italian, the two pivotal characters, one called Francesca, the other called Francesco, tend to translate as just simply Francis, which does create some confusion. So I thought there's a male Francis, which can be Peter, and there's the lady Francis, who can be Anya. And Dominic can be Kevin. Francesca the fromage, or quite a useful hat. Act one in the palace grounds. The story begins at twilight. You can't put it on now. In a fair arbour in the grounds of the palace belonging to Patrick, 29th Baron of Fromage. His only child, the beautiful Betty, has been celebrating her 18th birthday. During a game of hide and seek, she happens upon this Arthur and spies a handsome young soldier asleep therein. Betty then sings to her first cousin, with whom she is very close. So close indeed that when her father married Patricia, who was Patrick's father's younger stepsister, who then gave birth to Betty, his only daughter was also therefore his niece. Thus Betty was indeed her own first cousin. This duality gives the leading characters much more depth. She sings the aforementioned gay aria, fortunately, without disturbing his slumbers, despite the fortissimo top B-flat, in praise of his rugged good looks, and, in a fanciful way, wonders whether he's married and what he must be like as a lover, and whether she will ever get a boyfriend and lose her maidenhood. But she decides he is probably not her type anyway. However, just as she is about to leave, a crow intervenes, who happens to be none other than Tinker, the god of mischief in disguise, who drops something messy onto the soldier, who wakes with a start. He spies Betty peeking at him from behind a small potted plant and introduces himself as Kevin, one of the palace servants. Who has been called up to fight in the war and has to leave tonight, maybe never to see his home again. He begs her to lend him her handkerchief to wipe the poo off his uniform. Otherwise, he will assuredly be told off by his commanding officer, who has something of an attitude problem. Apparently, it is perfectly acceptable to have blood and viscera on your uniform, but not poo. Kevin's mother, now deceased, had also been a servant of the palace, but was the daughter of Patrick's half-brother by a previous marriage, thus making Kevin's mother, unbeknown to Betty, in fact, her great aunt. Doubtless, Betty felt drawn towards Kevin, being bound together, as it were, as distant cousins. They sing a duet in praise of the beautiful evening. He of his sorrow is having to leave, and she is a lamentable waste of handsome young men in the war. But as they sing, a third voice is heard, that of Mandy, the goddess of love, who appears disguised rather appropriately as a rabbit, who, with a twitch of her floppy ears, cast a spell over the young couple. Their hands touch when Nelly passes Kevin the handkerchief, which completes the spell. And so their hearts will always beat as one until either of them dies, appropriately accompanied by an offstage Henry chorus. They take their leave of each other, yet unbeknownst to themselves, their lives will be changed irrevocably forever. After a short jaunty orchestral interlude, the next scene unfolds with another servant who is now a messenger in the army, a fine young lad and friend of Kevin's called Francis. You can do a good crow, don't they? Conversing with Betty's maid, who happens also to be called Francis, the pivotal character of Francis, Betty's maid servant, it is understood, had a mother who had, as had Kevin's mother, also been a servant before her. Francis' father had been a footman, whose father, incidentally, was Patricia's uncle's son by his third marriage. Patricia's father's stepdaughter. So there would seem to be an element of family connection binding the story together, giving it some basis in aristocratic real life, and therefore that extra realism. Francis is, fortunately, some might say, for the sake of simplicity, homosexual. As was his father and grandfather before him. Which gives the tale a broader dimension. We don't know any more about his family history. Francis sings of Kevin's heroic and manly exploits on the battlefield, followed by Francis singing of her young mistress's unaccountable sadness when she ought to be out enjoying herself with her friends instead of moping about the palace and getting in everyone's way. Francis wistfully suggests to Francis that what he thinks Betty really needs is a jolly good man. Actually, though not exactly in those words. Francis giggles, topsy, but at that moment, Mandy hops past again with a knowing glance, quite hard to achieve in a bunny costume, buys Francis and Francis, then realizing there's a mistake, thinks better of it and hops off again. Francis, Betty's servant, exits, but straightway, after an ominous orchestral interlude, where the remaining Francis paces back and forth in troubled thought, the Baron Patrick and his wife, the Baroness Patricia, enter. We hear the famous Pat Pat duet. They are accompanied, unbeknown to them, by Tinker, who puts on a magic hat, which makes him invisible. So being a crow, you think he'd managed to bluff his way reasonably well without the hat. Francis reports to the Baron of the great battles he has witnessed, but reports also of Kevin's regiment, who have been in the thick of the fight and been completely routed. They sing a quartet. The Baron sings of the glory of war, and Patricia sings of the futility of war, while Francis and Tinker join in the chorus. Thank you, Tinker. In the next recitative, both the Baron and Baroness express concern over Betty's sullen mood, but attribute it to hormones. In the background, you can hear the wicked laughter of Tinker. Then the Baron Patrick, Baroness Patricia, and Francis exit. And as they do, Mandy, the goddess of love, disguised this time as a dove, swoops in and knocks the hat off Tinker, who, terrified, exits also at high speed. The music becomes expectant. Yet who should enter but Francis, Betty's servant? She spies the magic hat, picks it up, then exits. Act two in the palace. Betty and her servant Francis are in the palace. Francis is trying to cheer Betty up by showing her some of the Baron's lithographs, which she discovered under the bed while skiing. But Betty confesses to Francis that she is in love with a handsome servant, who is now fighting in the war, and she is worried for his safety that he might perish without knowing how much she loves him. So, to distract and amuse her mistress, Frances shows her the hat belonging to Tinker. Then, for a game, Betty snatches the hat and teasingly places it on Frances' head, accompanied by Puffer Smoke and a loud call from the orchestra. Frances vanishes. Betty is so surprised, well, she would be, that she faints. Lights in and curtain descends. As the curtain rises once more, the scene depicts the Baron Patrick and Frances, Kevin's friend, discussing military tactics. The Baron gives Frances some urgent dispatches to deliver to the front line. However, Frances, Betty's servant, has been hiding with a magic hat on her head. She decides that she should go to the war herself to find Kevin, if he's still alive, that is, and proclaim to him the news of her mistress's undying love for him. So to give herself a head start, she puts a sleeping potion in Patrick's wine glass, and as the Baron pours a glass of Frances on himself to drink before his departure, they both fall asleep. The next scene depicts Frances, Betty's servant, in a messenger's uniform disguised as Frances, Kevin's friend. Though you think only the magic hat, she could go dressed as a clown. What a difference it would make, with Betty fully recovered, who now understands about the hat's magical properties. Frances has informed Betty of her plan, and Betty sings a moving aria, calling upon Mandy, the goddess of love, to protect Frances on her perilous quest for the war. You can hear the voice of Mandy acknowledging receipt of this prayer from the wings. Frances exits for the front line with the sound of drums beating, and Patricia enters. Meanwhile, Betty confesses to her mother that she's in love with a handsome young man who's fighting in the war, but dare not tell her that he's only a humble servant. Patricia comforts her by saying that if he is as handsome as she says he is, and if he survives intact, then she would be interested in meeting him. Betty then sings of her fears that her mother would not approve of Kevin's lowly birth, but on the positive side believes she would probably appreciate his exceptional physique. Now we see that Frances and Patrick have woken from their sleep with no awareness that anything untoward has taken place. As Frances departs for the front line, the Baron wishes him Godspeed. We once again hear the laughter of Tinker off stage as he can't allow himself to be seen without his magic hat. Actually, he can't be seen with his magic hat either. When the coast is clear, Tinker comes out of hiding to enjoy a good glow. Go on, then. She is immediately joined by Mandy, who says that she will personally see to it that no harm comes to the lover. Tinker retorts haughtily that he has made other plans, ho ho. The exit in the opposite direction, ominous music, light space. Act 3, back in the palace, grinds.